News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Kerry Sinn Féin TD Pat Daly has initiated a High Court challenge against the attendance of super junior ministers at Cabinet, claiming it's unconstitutional. Last week, Hildegard Nocton, Sean Canney and Noel Grealish were all appointed as junior ministers attending Cabinet, along with the government chief whip, Mary Butler. We're joined now by Pat Daly himself to tell us why he's taking the action, and Professor David Kenny, head of law school at Trinity College, is going to explain just what the Constitution has to say on all of this. First of all, Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Pat, and good morning to David also.
Now, will you explain, Pa, exactly why you're taking this action?
Yeah, well, I suppose, first of all, I'd like to say that I'm glad that Judge Geertie has agreed to hear the application for leave in such a quick fashion, and that she's giving us time this afternoon. But why we're taking the case, I've been thinking about the issues here for some time now and had discussed it on a previous occasion with some barristers who I'd known from when I was working as a solicitor. And, since the recent government or the deal was done between the regional independents and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and there was an announcement that there was now going to be in total 19 maybe sitting at Cabinet, and the four super junior ministers. Mm-hmm. We've been looking at it and felt that, the super junior ministers really has become a prize or a part of the arrangement in the government negotiations. And it seemed to me that this arrangement is going to continue in perpetuity, mm-hmm. and that it was time to call it into question and maybe draw the line on whether it is constitutional or not.
Now, why does four become a problem? We've had one, we've had two. Why does four suddenly become the problem?
Yeah. Well, I suppose one is the problem, and I'm sure David will probably go into it in greater detail. But, as most people will know, there are certain rights and guarantees in the Constitution, and it outlines also a system of government which says that no more than 15 people shall sit in government or cabinet. So anything over 15 really is a problem, Pat. Now it's 19, and these ministers, super junior ministers, are in effect, according to the reported conversations with certain previous ministers, they are in effect full members of cabinet, sit at the cabinet table, have access to all papers, and then contribute at cabinet. Okay, so there's question marks over
they
this.
They don't vote, though. Isn't that the distinction, that's why they're super juniors and not full cabinet ministers? Because there's a numerical prohibition on any more than 15, but they don't, allegedly, they don't have any voting rights in cabinet.
Well, it appears that the cabinet don't vote and haven't voted for decades, according to some reports. So we think there's a question mark over the simple numbers game. We also think that there's a question mark over the use of public funds in order to give the extra allowances and expenses to these ministers, these junior ministers. But there's also a question about cabinet confidentiality. And the same article in the Constitution, Article 28, is quite prescriptive or strict in that members of government are bound by the obligations of confidentiality, but ministers of state are not so bound. So, rather than me trashing it all out here, it's obviously up to the judge initially to decide whether she believes that we have, in effect, a stateable case, or do we get over the threshold where we can go to full hearing of the case, and that application will be taken by her this afternoon.
Well, it's a fascinating case, Pa. Now, listening to that, Professor David Kenny, head of law school at Trinity College Dublin, full disclosure, my nephew. David, good morning.
Good morning, Pat, and good morning, Pa.
Now, what does the Constitution say about the size and the restrictions on cabinet?
Yeah, the Constitution is extremely clear on this point. It's one of the very technical and very plainly written rules. Article 28.1 says that the government, made up, of the cabinet, shall consist of not less than 7 and not more than 15 members. So it's a very clear numerical minimum and a very clear numerical maximum. And that number is maybe low by international standards. New Zealand, similar style of government, similar size of country, would have 20 cabinet ministers. But that's the rule that we have. And if you want to change that rule, if you want to get around it, you really need to change the Constitution. And you know, as people have been saying for about 30 years now, there has been this practice of non-ministers attending cabinet, but it's really not clear that that's allowed under that clause of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And the problem gets worse, really, with Article 28.4, which Pam mentioned as well, which is about cabinet confidentiality. And it says that the discussions of cabinet meetings, you know, are confidential and that has to be respected in all circumstances. So if super junior ministers are not members of the cabinet, then they're hearing confidential information. They're sort of third parties at that meeting, and confidentiality is being breached.
So their very presence is a breach of the confidentiality clause in the Constitution. Their very presence, because they're hearing stuff they shouldn't be hearing.
Exactly, that them being there is a breach of the confidentiality. They are subject to all those conversations. And, you know, the other point that about being treated as equals, as Pa put it, is a really good point as well. Leo Varadkar wrote in his column last weekend that these ministers bring briefs to cabinet for a discussion. Basically, they behave like ministers at the table. And that maybe makes it different from three other people who sit around the cabinet table and are not ministers. That's the Attorney General, the Secretary to the Government and the Chief Whip, who really are there for historical or operational reasons. They're there to facilitate the working of government. They're not behaving like ministers. And I think that's the core of the argument here.
So the Attorney General is there to offer legal advice. That's fine. What's the role of the Chief Whip at Cabinet?
So that's an interesting one. The Chief Whip has historically in Westminster systems like ours always been the secretary to the government in a formal sense. So for a very long time, that practice would have persisted where the Chief Whip sits there to sort of help the government operationally and advise them about Parliament. And then the secretary of to the Department of the Taoiseach is presumably there to take notes and to keep a record of what's discussed. So they're really there for operational purposes. They're not behaving like ministers. So you could raise some questions maybe about the Chief Whip, but I think for historical reasons you might say that that's a different category. The super junior minister practice, which has existed since about 1994, is perhaps a different kettle of fish, and I think the strongest argument can be made against that practice.
Now, the question of other people attending cabinet, are there situations where someone might be invited in to inform the cabinet of something, but they would only be party to, if you like, their own information going one way and not necessarily any cabinet discussion? Do we do that in our jurisdiction?
I'm actually not sure about the precise practice around that. Certainly, I believe it would never be the case that a third party would be allowed to sit and listen to any subsequent discussion. It might be the case that someone might be asked to present. And we all would have had that with meetings in our different places of work, mm-hmm. probably, where someone would come in simply to provide information and then leave. If that happens, I can't see it being a constitutional problem. But once the cabinet discussions begin, once the work of government starts, once decisions are in contemplation, that's when the confidentiality kicks in, and that's where the constitutional rules really take effect.
Now, what happens about custom and practice? If something like this has been ignored since the 90s, when the first junior minister, super junior, was appointed, does that have any standing in the courts that we've already established a way of doing things?
Yeah, not really when the constitutional rule would be so clear. If the courts accepted the argument that Pa's lawyers would be putting forward, I don't think having conducted that practice for a couple of decades would really be any kind of defence. In particular, with a practice like this, it's not always easy to see a case going forward. Not anyone can take a constitutional case. If myself or my constitutional lawyer friends are annoyed about this, we can't necessarily just go to court and raise the point. It probably takes a TD who, you know, is supposed to be holding government to account to bring a case like this. There are strict rules of standing in terms of who can take constitutional cases. So it might take sometimes quite a while for this to get to court. And I don't think maybe the delay, as you might say it, from spotting this practice and bringing the case would present a particular issue.
Now, it was introduced originally, obviously, to solve a political problem when they didn't have room for a particular coalition party member in the cabinet proper, so we make someone a super junior to keep everyone happy. But that would seem on the face of it to defy the Constitution. So without anticipating what the courts would finally decide, do you think Pa has a good case?
I do. I think it is a good case, and I think it's a strong argument. I think in constitutional law circles, this has been discussed for a long time as being at the very least questionable. And there will be defences mounted, like the presence of the Chief Whip and the Attorney General and historical practice. But I do think that it's a strong case, and I think it's an important one, and it deserves to be decided by the courts.
Now, given that, as Pa has pointed out, that generally they try to not have to vote on decisions. So the cabinet is never divided. They talk it down until they reach some sort of consensus and everyone gives, if you like, a silent nod around the table. So there's no formal vote and certainly no formal vote recorded in the minutes. So therefore, the idea that some historical vote since the 1990s to the present day might be in some way illegal doesn't arise, or does it?
Yeah, I think thankfully not. We won't be undoing every cabinet decision since 1994. If PAH was successful, I think the courts would regard the anything done in the past as done. This would really be about prospective practice going forward, whether or not this practice can continue. And as you said, this is something that successive governments have found convenient. Maybe it's necessary given the size and scope of government these days. But if that's the case, then the constitution may have to be changed. We may have to have a referendum, because that's the way that you have to get around a constitutional rule. You can't just adopt a contrary practice.
So everything that has happened, even though it might be in breach of the Constitution, and we can look back to other constitutional issues we've had, everything that's happened kind of holds. There's no question of going back and saying, well, those, you know, 18 people sitting around the table, it shouldn't have been 18, it should have been 15 plus the other officers, if you like, who are likely to attend. You can't say, well, those cabinet meetings therefore were in some way unconstitutional and therefore anything they did is wrong.
It probably won't undermine the decisions taken at those meetings. And generally, the courts take, it's complicated, but generally the courts take an approach that until something is challenged and until the courts find it to be problematic and unconstitutional, until that point, decisions taken and actions taken will tend to be treated as valid, because we can only be certain that something's constitutional. Actions and laws are presumed to be constitutional until they're found to be unconstitutional. So anything done in the past will tend to stick.
And this would be seen, I'm sure, to be in the public interest. So the state will pick up the tab for any costs.
Yeah, typically costs follow the event. So if you win, you get your costs. If you lose, you don't. But there has been a common practice in recent years that cases that are manifestly in the public interest will tend to have at least partial and sometimes full costs awarded in their favour. Couldn't predict what the courts would do in any individual case, but I would say there's a strong argument for that in a case like this.
And this starts and ends in our own courts. There's no European dimension to this. So we could see a fairly speedy decision on this one.
Yes, it should be. If it goes forward, I would think a hearing in the High Court, and given the nature and importance of the case, I would expect what we call a leapfrog appeal, where it might go straight to the Supreme Court on a point of extreme public importance rather than go through the Court of Appeal. So nothing in the legal system is terribly fast, but this would be faster than some.
And meantime, the super juniors will continue to attend custom and practice until they're told by the courts, you can't do it.
Precisely. We'll presume that the practice is constitutional unless and until the courts tell us that it's not.
All right. David, thank you very much for filling us in. I'll go back to PAH in a moment, but that's Professor David Kenny, Head of Law School at Trinity College in Dublin. So, PAH, encouraging noises there from David.
Yeah, and I remember David, he was speaking at one or two committees over the years, and his contributions were always very valid. I'm hoping that there will be some clarity given in relation to what is clearly questionable practices, which have, as you say, developed over the last 20 or 30 years, that it has long been the practice that the ministers, for certain ministers for state, can attend at cabinet. From a political point of view, I would say, following your discussion, you know, we don't need more ministers. We just need more effective government to deal with the various issues that are coming.
I mean, David did point out other jurisdictions have more cabinet ministers for the complex world we live in, and maybe this is a way of bringing more talent into the cabinet room. And if we want to do that going forward, we may have to have a referendum to increase the maximum allowable number of cabinet ministers.
Well, of course, all of the individual ministers make their own decisions on a daily basis. I don't necessarily think that the problems that are clearly outlined as regards health and housing and cost of living and, you know, storm damage even, and even the question about who is responsible for the wall that was on your news bulletin before the programme commenced, you don't necessarily need more ministers for that. We need a government who can make decisions in a speedy manner and make effective decisions.
I'll read you some of the text, though. Not everyone is pleased by your move. Sinn Féin bully boy tactics, have they set out to simply disrupt every action of the government for the next 5 years? A similar one. Why has Pat Daly only raised this now? Is it another tactic by Sinn Féin to cause disruption and waste public money? A question, if this succeeds, will former junior ministers lose their pensions, the super juniors, based on the income they had? Normally, in those situations, what you have, you hold. Is Sinn Féin giving the commitment that if they ever got into government, they'll have no super junior minister? That's from John. Is that a commitment from you, Pa?
Yeah, well, we will comply with the Constitution if we ever get into government. But just to answer to one of the texts that we've only decided to take this now, that it's some sort of... I actually wrote to the Taoiseach in July of 2020 and questioning this, and I received a reply saying that it has long been the practice that certain ministers for state attend cabinet. It's a matter for the Taoiseach, and there was no conflict. So it's not that this has only arisen in the last 2 weeks. Certainly the case, we only moved it yesterday, or we sought the permission of the court yesterday. But that's it's not the case that this has only just come into our heads after Christmas, because we were upset that John Kenny or one of the other super juniors is after getting a post. That's not
all right.
The case.
Well, we shall watch how that progresses through the courts, if indeed it does. Pat Daly, Kerry, Sinn Féin, TD, thank you very much for joining us. Well, now this.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR
on News Talk.